At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
It's time for a Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Nobody can ever tell you that you couldn't do it, because you did.
On Giants.com.
You know what I saw? New York Giant Prime.
And the Giants mobile app.
17-14 is the final. One touchdown, we are world champions. Believe it, and it will happen.
Part of the Giants Podcast Network.
Let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs. Have some fun.
It is Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com, as well as the mobile app. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. It's presented by Cadillac, the official luxury vehicle of the New York Football Giants, in multiple ways for you to interact with us here on the program. You give us a ring, 201-939-4513. You could hit us up using hashtag Giants Chat. A reminder, you can find the archive of the show and our entire podcast network on the Giants mobile app, podcast platforms everywhere, and at giants.com/podcast. So yesterday's program, we gave a review of the Giants' focus in free agency, at least the first wave, and what that means for the potential of the team. We'll continue moving on that front. But one of the other things, Paul, that I wanted to pick up on is we've had all of these new arrivals address the media in some capacity over the last few days. And I don't know if you had an opportunity to provide some takeaways from some of those pressers. I thought there were a few interesting things that at least I picked up on that I wanted to throw out there and get your reaction as well. Number one, Jermaine Illuminor. I mean, the man's personality is in a league of its own, is it not? I mean, I've never seen a guy so excited to join any team on any face of the earth. He would run through a brick wall, it seems, and not even have to pay him accordingly to get him to play for this team.
It's hard to recall a guy at a pro level who shows that type of enthusiasm. I've seen college kids.
Sure.
You know, excuse me, when they sign their letter of intent or they play their first game or they get to their first NCAA or whatever the case may be, literally be out of their mind with joy. Illuminor was showing that just by walking into the building before he even put on a helmet. I mean, it was really cool. But, you know, remember now, he's a Jersey guy.
Sure. He does have ties to the local area. That's fair. And I think that's why he was so excited, because when you grow up in this area and you get to now put on the uniform, it makes it that much more special. But he did also talk about the bond he's had with Carmen Brasillo and also highlighted the fact that Brasillo learned a lot from Dante Scarnecchia when they were in New England.
Scarnecchia.
And the fact that when they were in New England, it rubbed off on Brasillo what the guy who taught him the way was all about. Because Illuminor says, you know, that philosophy he's carried with him throughout his career, meaning give me effort and I'll do the rest as a coach.
Right.
That type of a lens, that type of a philosophy.
Well, we know that because of Dable's roots with New England, he's got some ties to Scarnecchia too. Okay, so it doesn't surprise me that when Brasillo had his interview with the Giants after his contract with the Raiders expired, and, you know, I was listening to Patty Trader's pod, and she talked to a Raiders insider, and he said that Antonio Pierce, who, as we know, is a blue-blooded Giant himself, and about as straight shooter and hard-nosed fella as you're ever going to want to meet, he apparently told Carmen Brasillo that, you know, We'd like to have you back here, but your contract's up. If you want to try something else, go to the Giants. Pierce apparently gave him and the Giants a great recommendation for each other. And that carries a lot of weight for me because I think the world of Antonio Pierce in terms of his integrity, his honesty, his toughness. You know, Antonio gets right to the bone of the situation. He's not one to sugarcoat anything. And for him to suggest to Brusillo, and I'm sure to the Giants, as I understand it, that, hey, this would be a good fit for you guys, that says a lot and carries a lot of weight with me. Then, of course, I'm sure that Coach Dable, you know, went back into his Patriots tentacles, if you will.
Or his Rolodex, yeah.
You know, and you know, checked on Brusillo as well. So I'm not at all surprised that they believe that Brusillo is the right guy who's finally going to get this offensive line squared away. I have a lot of optimism that this is the guy to do it. Because the Raiders had an offensive line that I think by any stretch of the imagination would be considered overperforming this past year. They don't have a bunch of Pro Bowl household names on that offensive line. And they did yeoman's work. And when you get down to it, it's like Parcells always used to tell us. Coach's number one priority, give your players the best chance to win. Put them in position where they can succeed, and you got to try to maximize their potential and get the most out of them. Well, the Giants' offensive line, for the most part, hasn't been very good for the last decade, and I think it's fair to say that none of those lines even came close to overachieving once. Maybe the 2022 team, you know, which was functional, but I think they were actually decent. And I think they performed to their capabilities. But have any of the other lines under recent coaches overperformed? I don't think so.
No, I wouldn't go that far. And I think in 2022, it's the run blocking that stood out
Yes. More
so than any other facet
Sure.
of what you want to see out of an offensive line. But I think your point is well taken about the Raiders. And also, I mean, look at Jermaine Illuminor, who has been with a few teams over the course of his career, whether it be Baltimore, New England,
Las
Vegas.
And played his best football last year.
He did. He played his best football last year. He also did not emerge as a starter, a mainstay, until the last few seasons in Las Vegas too, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not overlook that. So I think that speaks volumes of what Brusillo helped put together, developing guys, and developing guys also that are not necessarily rookies. Players that just came into the league. You know, that's the challenge here for the Giants. It's not just taking players that are going to come right out of college and making something out of them. It's taking guys who have been in a variety of schemes, a variety of systems, and seeing at this point in their career, can you get them to click with what you want to run here? Whether it be an Illuminor, whether it be a John Runyon, or whether it be an Evan Neal. I mean, let's not forget, Brusillo, one of his biggest tasks is working with Evan Neal and seeing whether or not Evan Neal
right.
can solidify the right tackle spot, or if that doesn't work out, does he become the swing guy, or do they experiment with him at guard? So, I mean, those are a lot of question marks that he has to find answers
no
to.
Doubt.
And once again, these guys, I guess what I'm getting at, Paul, is when you don't have a player coming in from college, they've developed habits already, right,
yes.
in the NFL.
Yes.
So the challenge as a coach is, how do I get them to move forward with some of the habits I like, but how do I get them to abandon some of the habits that I don't like?
Well, I call it the scrape down.
Yeah.
Okay, you got to get out the turpentine, and you got to scrape all the old paint off the walls and then sand it down before you start putting the fresh coat on. And that's what happens a lot of times with these veterans who have not had great work habits or great technique. They need to be scraped down. Now, look at a guy like Van Roten, who was a journeyman in this league. He's been around for the better part of a decade. He's over 34 years old. You know, he's been with the Jets for a few years on what was not a good Jets offensive line. And he went out to the Raiders and last year was a starting right guard, and I'm pretty sure if I've read the accounts correctly, had the best year of his career. Well, Brasillo was his coach. Is that a coincidence? I don't think so.
And Van Roden, I mean, if you look at his resume, like you said,
he's been on like five teams,
he's been
right?
A lot of teams. He was with Carolina for a little bit. I mean, I'm bringing up his breakdown. Green Bay, Seattle. Then he went to the CFL, Jacksonville, Carolina, the Jets, the Bills, and then he joined the Raiders last season.
Is that not the definition of journeyman?
Without a doubt.
And he played some pretty good ball this year. So, you know, you got the two guys on the right side, him and Illuminor, who elevated their game to where the Raiders were considered to have a pretty good line this past season. Well, the Giants just stole the coach and they stole the right tackle. So let's see how that goes.
Well, and that's why I think it's encouraging, because you want to see somebody that has worked with seasoned pros and has been able to get even better football out of them. Because that's, once again, what he's walking into. Even a guy like John Runyon, who I also wanted to bring up, because when he spoke with the media, he was asked about, does he have a preference? He did say the left versus
the
right. He has a choice.
He did.
Said he's open to both sides.
Played better at left guard than he did right guard, and I'm sure that's why he said that.
Well,
because
I wouldn't doubt it.
His results were better.
But listen, in a pinch, you need to have a guy that's comfortable, Paul, on both sides. You don't wish, you don't anticipate for injuries to happen, but that, unfortunately, is the nature of the beast. And you know, Runyon's another guy who grew up in the area, South Jersey, because his father played in Philadelphia.
No doubt.
So it's interesting. You got him and Illuminor now coming back to really their old stomping grounds.
Well, look, I don't want to overplay the pride card, okay? But I think there's an awful lot of pride. You could sense it in Illuminor coming back to New Jersey, coming back to his roots. And quite honestly, if you listen to Runyon talk, he can't say enough about his father being a longtime Eagle, having battles with the Giants between the, you know, Philly and New York, understanding what that rivalry is like, saying to us on the media session how excited he is to be part of this now, because he remembers growing up and watching it. Now he gets to be part of it. I can't think that there's even an ounce of blood in him that wants to let his dad down in terms of being able to live up to the high standard that this rivalry produced over the years. I have to believe there's extra motivation there for him. No matter if he's on the Giants or the Eagles, I have to believe that just stepping back into this rivalry again, he wants to put his best stuff on tape.
Well, especially since the family has a history within the NFC East, so he now has an opportunity to add the latest chapter with respect to that Giants-Eagles rivalry, except, of course, he's now on the opposite end of it, whereas his dad was in Philadelphia.
Which, by the way, he said was okay, because once he got to the NFL, he said after he was in Michigan, once he got to the NFL, he said his ties to the Eagles were over, because he knew when he got to the NFL, the odds of 1 in 32, you're going to land in Philadelphia where your dad played. He said, no, once I got to the NFL, my ties to the Eagles were done. I knew I was going to have to, you know, root for the team that I was playing for.
Well, which makes sense. I mean, you got to be open-minded, because you could go to markets where maybe you're not ultra excited about, or a team that you didn't like when you were a kid. Something tells me you're going to have to find a way to get over that.
Yeah.
You're going to have to find a way to get over that quickly.
Hey, the check does cash, right?
Yes, well, regardless of where your fandom was when you were a kid. And he actually has an interesting connection to Brasillo, which I thought was fascinating. Brasillo came to Michigan's pro day right as the pandemic was starting. I mean, that's amazing. And Brasillo was the one to break it to Runyon and a teammate. Pro day's not happening, because this world is now needing to attack something that is out of the norm.
Yeah.
So he always remembered that. And then he figured, all right, maybe when I get to the NFL, we'll cross paths again. And here we go a few years later. He's going to be his own personal position coach.
Yeah, I just think that... you know, we've talked about this for several off seasons, and folks, if you've been tuning into Big Blue Kickoff Live for a lot of the years, you're familiar with what I'm going to say. But I'm going to say it again, because once again, the Giants have a new offensive line coach. I have always felt all along that the offensive line coach, truthfully, for me, is the most important of the position coaches on an NFL team. Number two for me is the secondary coach. I think those two assistants, I'm not talking about the coordinators.
Sure.
I'm talking about the position guys. okay? Because there is so much involved with those two units. They control the game. Let's not kid ourselves. Your offensive line can control the narrative of a game. Your secondary, if it's porous like Swiss cheese, well, guess what? It allows the other team to control the narrative, and you're in deep, deep trouble. Those are the two position coaches that I have always felt are absolutely critical to have success. And I know the Giants have Jerome Henderson locked up, and he is a great secondary coach by everybody's admission. I think the Giants actually have an offensive line coach now that has given me a lot of promise. And I like some of the other guys that have been here over the last several years, too. For whatever reason, they didn't maximize the room. I can't tell you exactly why, because there can be many reasons why. But they did not maximize the room. I suspect Brasillo will.
I would also say the defensive line coach you could throw in there, too. Because, I mean, that group is just as critical as well. And, I mean, listen, if they're not getting home, it really doesn't matter how well coached the secondary is. Those guys are going to be left out to dry. So I would say, really, on each side of the trenches, you can argue those assistants
are critical. I would say the difference is, defensively, schematics have a lot more to do with the effectiveness of your defense than just the defensive line coach. On the other side of the ball, your offensive line coach, if he's not getting those guys to win the trenches, no matter what scheme you use, your offense is cooked.
Well, I'm not going to disagree with you there. I mean, everything feeds off of that. Plus, remember, there are also a lot of offensive line coaches, Paul, that are run game coordinators in addition to the O-line
coach.
Yes,
they are.
So that means they take on even more of a prominent role within the scheme and the, strategy, to your point.
No question. So, you know, there's certainly some evidence in Coach Brasillo's background that says he can be the right guy here. And I'm sure that, you know, from what I've heard from other players, you know, who have been around, that they're looking forward to it.
The other thing that I want to touch on before we open up the phone lines is both offensive linemen were asked a lot about how when you come to the Giants, this market, more eyes are on the O-line than other teams. I don't know necessarily, Paul, if I agree with that. I think the media attention perhaps is a little bit more, but I think you go to any team, you talk to any fan, they're going to take notice of the offensive line when they're good and when they're bad.
You think so?
I mean, granted, listen, I host on a national platform, so I hear from fans from all different walks of life. So, you know,
I will defer to you on that. I will defer.
But, I mean, this idea that only here people pay more attention to the line, I wouldn't necessarily agree with that.
I will say this, and this probably goes back a little before your time. Before Summerall and Madden got together on CBS many years ago, and it was Summerall and Brookshire, they did not talk a ton about the offensive line play. Remember, Brookshire was not a lineman, all right? And neither was Summerall. They didn't do as much of that. When John Madden got to the CBS booth and they gave him the telestrator, and you know, Madden is just a blood and guts in the trenches
kind of guy. Yeah.
And he started to bring national attention on Sundays with the CBS telestrator, talking about with all his colorful language about the snot bubbles and the sweats flying around and all this other stuff, right? And then he would get out his telestrator pen and he'd start circling this, go, look at this here, look at this guy, boom, whack, wow, pow.
It was like an arts and crafts project.
And that to me was the opening of the window, if you would, to the offensive linemen beginning to get some recognition. They always talk about how the Yankee Stadium, New York Giants football crowd with their chance of defense, which started back in 1956, was the first time that defensive players in the NFL started to get some notoriety. And then they really got it when Sam Huff was the subject of the documentary by Walter Cronkite on CBS. And they mic'd him up for a game. And that was a documentary that aired on CBS. And that was the real explosion to where people really started to care about defensive players, even beyond the chance of defense from the Yankee Stadium crowds. Well, for me, Madden and the telestrator was the breakthrough for the offensive linemen. So I could see your point. Maybe it's true on a national scope. If it is, it's because of John Madden, because he's the guy who started it all.
Sure. But I mean, getting back to my point, the questions from the reporters who cover this team was, I mean, more about over the last 10 years, given the fact that the Giants have had issues up front, that group is put under the microscope.
No doubt.
Maybe more than elsewhere. And there's validity behind that. But if you talk to another team that has had major problems up front, I would say their fan base has taken notice of that too. And also when it's good. For example, I consider last season, I think the Lions had one of the best offensive lines.
Sure they did. Okay?
Detroit, did they not get some positive feedback on a national scale because of how well the team did? What David Montgomery, what Jahmyr Gibbs produced on the ground, Jared Goff being well protected. Well, and that was a reflection of really good offensive line play. You could even say the same thing about the Chiefs during certain stretches. I don't think they were as good as the Lions because, I mean, you had some issues at tackle and then Joe Tooney went down in the postseason. But they also held their own with the run game and Pacheco to help them put together a relatively lengthy drive.
Well, I'm agreeing with your premise. I'm deferring. You host a national talk show. I'm deferring to you that people around the country, when they look at their teams, they're paying attention at least somewhat to the offensive line. I'm going to defer to you on that. I'm simply saying that that wasn't the case before John Madden was doing his telestrator.
But I was just focused on more the present.
Because I think since that time, all of the network analysts have been very much aware and astute to the offensive line play because Madden made it nouveau. Madden took people into the trenches and said, hey, folks, this is really where the game is decided. You better focus on this. You better learn about this. You know, what a fortuitous luck of fortune that during the time Madden was doing this and becoming the legend that he was, that, you know, guys like William the Refrigerator Perry were playing defensive tackle, which made it all the more colorful and all the more exciting for Madden to talk about the trenches.
Sure.
And since that time, the networks have basically been forced to. Madden opened up that door, and every analyst since then makes it a point to talk about the trenches.
Well, you also have several former offensive linemen that serve as analysts.
That too.
So that helps. Yeah. I mean, case in point, Mark Schlereth, for example, okay? He's on Fox. So when there's a play that's good up front, well, who better than to help break it down in terms of the alignment of the offensive line? So I think that has helped further the conversation. And then I think the other thing that has helped, and this is why I think it's more of a national conversation as opposed to one market, the access that fans now have to film, too.
Well, you could all watch Game Pass,
yeah,
right?
But
and everybody knows that NFL Network and ESPN do an awful lot of breakdowns during the course of the week. I mean, look, Brian Baldinger is as good as they come. We had guys here with Sean O'Hara and David Deal who were doing it for us.
Yep.
You know, David went off to Memphis to help coach, but Sean's still here. Didn't the Jets have Damian Woody on their broadcast?
Well, Woody is on ESPN, so, I mean, he's still out and about.
You know, I mean, here's the thing. When you have those guys consistently reminding us of offensive line play over the years, well, again, they followed Madden's lead, and they're not going to let it go. And that's, you're right, that's part of it, too. The fact that offensive linemen have gravitated into the announcing ranks. You don't just see quarterbacks announcing. You've seen offensive linemen get behind a microphone, and you know that they're not going to ignore their own position. That's not going to happen.
Yeah. Well, and once again, just to circle back to the point, I found it interesting that Illuminor and Runyon were asked that question. I thought both of them didn't necessarily take it in a completely different direction. I mean, they were honest. Listen, you come in, you work hard, you do your job. You're not going to think about, because now you're wearing a Giants uniform as opposed to a Packers or a Raiders uniform. I mean, Runyon was with Aaron Rodgers. You don't think there's pressure on every play to make sure, right, that
right?
Aaron stays upright? I mean, think about, for example, and I know this is not the greatest example because I'm talking about the other team that plays in this market, but when Aaron went down 4 plays into the season,
mm-hmm,
you're going to tell me that offensive line didn't feel terrible about what happened?
He got hit on every one of those plays.
But, I mean, blink of an eye, you lose your starter. So you can imagine every Packers offensive lineman. I mean, and remember, David Bakhtiari, who's no longer with the team, mm-hmm. they released him. He was a veteran guy. I mean, if he would miss an assignment and Aaron would have to do what he needed to do, I mean, I can only imagine what goes through your head. Okay, so Aaron didn't play for the Raiders, but Jimmy Garoppolo's not the most mobile guy.
No.
You don't have your assignment right. Jimmy gets hurt. They're going in a different direction. Look, so I think that just holds true for most NFL offensive linemen.
Sure, sure.
No, if you wanted to add something.
No, there's really, not, okay. there's really nothing else to say. I think that if those guys have pride in their jobs, and most of them do, or they wouldn't be doing it because it's damn tough work.
Yeah, well, they wouldn't last you know, as long as they've done,
to
too.
To be in the trenches yeah. is not a lot of fun. Okay, that's nasty stuff right there. If you have any pride at all in your work, well, the idea is don't let that quarterback get dirty. And you'll do what you have to do.
Few reminders before we open up the phone lines. Giants Huddle Podcast, you can check that out. Your favorite podcast platform, you go to giants.com/podcasts. Season ticket membership. Take your fandom to the next level. Stay connected to the club all year round, not just on game days. Memberships are now available for the 2024 season. To learn more about all the exclusive member benefits, visit giants.com/tickets. Limited inventory is available. And the Giants official connected TV streaming app, Giants TV. It brings you original video content, in-game highlights, on demand and direct to Big Blue fans. Giants TV, it's free. It's on Apple TV, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, and the Giants mobile app. All right. Let's open up the phone lines as we move forward here. We've got Ryan in Illinois. Ryan, welcome aboard. What do you got for us?
Hey, guys. Firstly, I was maybe going to comment on the previous conversation real quick and then get to my initial point.
Sure.
I was going to say that an average offensive line, I think, is the one that gets overlooked, one that the Giants haven't seen in a little while. Because if you're terrible, you'll obviously get negative feedback. If you're great like the Lions, you'll get very positive.
Yeah.
But I think it's those middle-of-the-road teams that get overlooked, and then the fans kind of forget about that. So it's the in-between kind of the sticks kind of teams that are the ones that are overlooked from the offensive line standpoint.
But fair enough.
Anyways, sure. Moving forward, we talk a lot about positional value and how Joe Shane views the positions. And I think it was reflected in free agency just now how, you know, we basically give up the contracts of Saquon and Xavier of two non-premium positions to get Brian Burns at a very premium position. So I'll ask, as we shift our focus to the draft, how do you think the philosophy changes? Obviously, in the first couple rounds, you know, your tackles, wide receivers, really important. But as you get to the second half of the draft, do you think some of those premium positions get dried up really quickly? And then, so say in the fifth, sixth, seventh round, should you focus on non-premium positions because they haven't been targeted as much? Or do you think throughout the entire draft you have to have the mindset of tackle, quarterback, wide receiver, defensive tackle, they carry more weight? Or do you think it shifts because of the earlier rounds?
All right, well, we'll let you go on that note, Ryan, and appreciate the phone call. An interesting question. I mean, my personal opinion, Paul, I think that you can't get so caught up in focusing on a position in the draft, because then I think you pass up on good value at maybe, to the caller's point, a non-premium position. Especially, mm-hmm. remember, when you get to the sixth round, the tail end of the fifth round, you know, you're getting into territory where some of these guys are undrafted free agents on other teams' boards. You may value them a little bit more. So you can't get so caught up in, well, we got to go after a tackle. Well, maybe the tackle is an undrafted free agent, whereas the safety you could pick up is more bang for your buck mm-hmm. under the circumstances. So that's my interpretation, as opposed to focusing on premium versus non-premium.
Yeah, the rule of thumb has always been when you get to the back of the what's now the third day, sixth and seventh round in particular, maybe not so much the fifth, but certainly when you get to the sixth and seventh rounds, that you're looking more at traits than anything else. You're looking for size, speed, the frame, the guy's frame. And if he fits those traits, all right, that you're looking for, the chances are either A, he can be a help on special teams because he's got size, speed, toughness, those kinds of things. So the position isn't that important. You could take a linebacker, a safety, a cornerback. Any one of those guys could be a good special teams player. You know, So the position is not that important at that stage of the draft. You're simply looking at traits to see, A, can they help you on special teams right away? And B, and here's the other one, if the guy's got really good traits and you say to yourself, all right, so why was he downgraded? Was it the school he went to? Was it the coaching that he got? Was it that he had some injuries in his career? Was it that for whatever reason, you know, he was a late bloomer? And so if at least he's got the traits, or what I like to always say, the toolbox, if the guy's got the skill set and the toolbox, but for whatever reason hasn't developed into a highly graded player, you'll take a stab at that player, thinking that if we get him in our house, we can work with that toolbox. That's a good toolbox there. We'll find a way to get something out of him. And that's regardless of position. The positional value that people talk about all the time, and quite frankly, that's a lot of bunk, to be honest with you. It's so overplayed. It's the same people who overplay analytics. They overplay this stuff. Is it part of the equation? In some instances, yes. But it is well overplayed in most instances. And the bottom line is, all coaches will tell you their opinion is to get the best player in each round. That's what they want more than anything else. The GM may put in, you know, the need a little bit. He may look at positional value a little bit. The head coach just says, get me good players. That's all he wants. I'll find a way to use them.
The other thing about positional value, which you got me thinking, is keep in mind, positional value is going to fluctuate based on the team and the scheme. For example, there may be defenses that don't value linebacking play.
Yeah.
Right? But there's another defense where they're going to keep the linebackers on the field because of what they need to do.
You guys will figure it out, but, you know, for the longest time, the Giants did not have very good linebacker play. You talk about the fact that they hadn't drafted one in the first round until forever, and depending upon how you want to, you know, term Thibodeau, is he an outside linebacker? No, now he's the new breed edge rusher. He's not really an outside linebacker. Sure. He's an edge rusher.
But he was also,
that's the new word.
But, I mean, I go by what they did in college.
Right.
More so than what happens in the NFL.
But the point being, there was a philosophy here that, oh, you know what? With all the sub packages and all the nickel and dime defenses that you're playing, well, maybe it's not so important to have, you know, really stellar play at linebacker. Well, this administration went out and signed Bobby Okereke. And you're a fool if you don't think that he's one of the most important players on that defense, because he is. This administration believed that having a stellar middle linebacker was critical to their plans. And they went out and they got him.
Well, which is another example of the Giants are going to look at a position differently than everybody else. So that's why when people say positional value, those are generic terms which have just been thrown out over the years. But if you speak to coordinators, one coordinator is going to tell you, you know, I ask my safety to take on a different role than a safety elsewhere. So therefore, he's going to be somebody that we're going to target in free agency. For example, a guy like Xavier McKinney, right? I mean, if you bring McKinney into the slot, or you bring him up closer to the line of scrimmage, and you try to tap into his variety of skill set, you may be willing to pay more than three other teams who wouldn't utilize him.
Well, how about this? What if your coordinator decides he wants your safety to wear the green dot on his helmet?
Well, that's another one, yeah.
He's going to be my signal caller instead of my linebacker, my middle linebacker.
Yeah,
all that. Well, maybe, probably that DC values his safety a little bit more.
And another point, just to look through the last two drafts, the late round picks, you could tell the Giants were looking for traits as opposed to value. I mean, Trey Hawkins, with his athleticism and length, Jordan Riley, okay, Javarius Owens, what he could do on special teams.
Absolutely.
Even Darian Beavers, he was played all around the spectrum on defense at his various schools.
It wasn't about positional value for those guys at all. It was about size, frame, speed, physically, what do they bring to the toolbox? Those guys had some tools.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Joe is in Pennsylvania joining us. What's happening, Joe? What do you got for us?
Hi, guys. I see we got some blocking tight ends this year. So I was pleased to see that because I think we could have used them last year. I don't know if any of them can play H-back or not. Anyway, I was looking at I'm pleased with the running back we got there, Singletary, I think. Is that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah, but what I was wondering, in the second or third round, could there be a back of value to drop to us that you think we could take? If not, I'd like to see us get somebody later, like Bradshaw we used to get, I think, in a sixth round, or Dave Maggett, a scat back. That's all to mix it up with the backs we have, because I think they're pretty well the same, you know.
Well, Singletary's got some elusiveness to
him. He does.
I wouldn't overlook that. And you just drafted Eric Gray last year.
And he's got some of that at the line, too.
Yeah, and Brightwell is a little bit shifty, too, when he gets out in open space. We've seen some flashes of that.
Yeah, them two are pretty well the same. But I'm looking for a breakaway back, or is there one there that would you think... I don't know when the backs are going and how much I didn't see or hear too much of them this year.
I don't think you're going to see any running backs taken until at least the third round, Joe. And to be honest, if the reports were true, and we're not going to confirm or deny, but if they were true that the Giants were trying to woo A.J. Dillon as a free agent last week amongst a few other teams, and he wound up going back to Green Bay. Now, what does that tell you? They were shopping for a big back. They weren't shopping for a scat back or a third down guy. Dillon's over 240 pounds.
Yeah.
He's a moose.
Yeah.
So if they were looking to bring him in, then I don't think they're looking for a scat back. They're looking for more of a horse.
Yeah, the other reason why I also don't think they're necessarily interested in that position is because you've got Wandell Robinson, who you could utilize on third down out of the backfield, and you also signed Isaiah McKenzie, who is sort of a pseudo running back slash wide receiver. He's a mix. So I think they could tap into both of those players regardless of what they entertain in the draft.
And I'll be honest with you. I think that Brightwell isn't a bad power back to be utilized in certain situations. When he's had a chance to flash, he's actually run the ball pretty hard.
Yeah,
that's what I was looking at. I think him and Singletary are pretty well like a power back there with some breakaway stuff.
Well, Brightwell's bigger. You know, he's what, 5'11", Singletary's 5'8"?
I wouldn't compare. Personally, I would not compare the two. I think Singletary and Brightwell are very different.
Very different.
Yeah. I don't think there's many similarities. I also think if you utilize what Buffalo did with Singletary, you'll see he was a receiver out of the backfield.
Yep.
He does have some breakaway speed. They even ran him down the field for some long passes. I think that Singletary can offer maybe more than what the overall public thinks he can bring to the table. All right, Joe.
What was Dave Maggett? What did he go to get drafted at, Paul? Do you recall?
Wow.
And we'll let you go.
I know Bradshaw definitely was like a sixth rounder. They had a great draft that year.
Yeah, Bradshaw was deep in the third day. My goodness, I want to say Maggett was a four.
And thanks for the phone call, Joe. Appreciate
let me check it. I'll look it up for you, Joe, because my memory's a little bit sketchy on that. I think Maggett was a fourth rounder. I could tell you this, Parcells didn't want him.
And Bradshaw was a seventh rounder.
Yes, he was a seventh. He was a seventh.
Yeah.
Maggett was coming out of Townsend. Where was he? He was a fifth. He was a fifth. Parcells did not want him. He looked at him and he's like, what are we doing with this guy? He's a little shrimp. He's a scat back. I want guys who are bigger, more durable, guys who are going to hold up. And the scouts told Bill, hey, get him on the field. Get him on the field before you start criticizing him. You'll see. He turned out to be one of Parcells' favorite players. You know, this is why coaches don't always get to pick the groceries.
Well, because sometimes the executives see things differently. Yeah.
Well, the scouts spent how much time
researching
the player and going to visit with the player and watching the player. The head coach doesn't necessarily do a ton of that, you know? And Maggett was, wow, he was something, man. He was something else. He was a good player, real good player.
But would you agree, Paul, that I'm not saying they already have that, but I think between McKenzie and Robinson, if you're looking for that style of runner, I think you can take advantage of what the receiving corps offers.
With gadget plays.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I agree. And the fact that they were reportedly looking at Dylan tells you they're not thinking about grabbing a scat back anywhere. At least it doesn't seem like it.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Billy is in Minnesota. Billy, what's happening?
Hey, I was just wondering, you know, I think first, I appreciate you guys. You know, I listen to you guys all the time.
Thank you.
The Vikings obviously trade for the Texans pick, and obviously they're going to try to move up for a quarterback, and I think they want May or McCarthy. And I was wondering if they approach the Giants at 6, obviously we really need to land a wide receiver that we can build our offense around with that pick. But if they offer like those two first round picks and then like a third round pick in 2025 or a third round pick this year, like, would you guys accept that? Or do you think Shane would look at that? Or like, how do you feel?
Well, I don't think the Vikings are going to give up two first rounders to move from 11 to 6. I find that very hard to believe.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like icing on the cake what you're asking for. And the other thing is, Minnesota's not going to make a move like that until they see how the draft pans out, because one of those guys you mentioned could be off the board in the first three selections with Chicago, Washington, and New England. And think about it. The Bears traded Justin Fields. Washington parted ways with Sam Howell. New England got rid of Mac Jones. All three of those teams, Paul,
mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that they're guaranteed, but the writing seems to be on the wall that in all likelihood, they're putting their ducks in order to go after quarterbacks. So one of those guys, probably Billy, is going to be off the board, and then the Vikings may not have an opportunity to even entertain the idea of moving up.
Let's put it this way. The rumor winds, or the trade winds, if you will, are very hot because of a connection between McCarthy and Josh McDown, right? And he is their quarterback's coach.
Yeah.
So a lot of people believe that the Vikings are salivating after McCarthy, and that as the draft starts to fall into line during that first night, that they may try to make a jump up to go get McCarthy. That seems to be some of the storylines that are floating around. Now, look, I'll say this to you. All right, I don't think McCarthy should be picked that high. I think a lot of this is hype. A lot of this is hype. And it's people desperate for a quarterback. If the Vikings want to give the Giants a boatload of picks, plus the 11, to move up to 6, because they've got to have McCarthy, you know what? I would take the phone call. I would listen. I would absolutely take the phone call and listen. I don't know if I'm making the trade because I badly want Odunze for the Giants at 6. Really, I do. I would take Neighbors, but I'm more of the big frame wide receiver than the small frame wide receiver. Both guys are supposed to be absolute blue chip impact players, can't miss. It's hard for me to trade out of a spot where everybody thinks I'm getting a can't-miss player. So you're really going to have to knock me over if you're Minnesota and want me to move down to 11. I don't know if that answers your question, but that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, and one more comment. You know, Shane at the Combine said that there were a lot of, like, good twos and threes for quarterbacks in the draft. And so that makes me wonder if they're thinking, like, third, fourth, maybe fifth round, if they're thinking about taking a quarterback. But then that confuses me because we just signed, you know, Drew Locke kind of as like insurance for whatever happens to
sure, but remember, Billy, Drew Locke only got a one-year deal, so
that's true.
He's not here forever.
But then my other part of me thinks that, well, like, Tommy DeVito, he shined last year, and, you know, you could argue that was just like good luck or whatever. But his first game against Las Vegas or Dallas, I don't remember which one it was, he didn't play very great. He threw a couple picks, I think. And then that last game where they took him out to start Tyrod, and it was making me get annoyed because, like, it was like he had one bad game, and they were like, hey, well, now you're done. And now the way they talk about quarterbacks at the draft makes it sound like they're not going to give him another shot. But then you look at how many bad games Josh Allen had, or Tom Brady had, or all these great quarterbacks have had. They they didn't have one bad game. They didn't get benched for the rest of their career. So I wonder if they draft somebody. Obviously, you can only have three quarterbacks rostered, I think.
Well, I mean, you could roster as many QBs you want. It's unusual to have more than three because you can't afford to eat up that much space, but you can always waive a guy and try to put him on the practice squad. So, I mean, they may have some flexibility and options. And listen, Billy, we'll let you go on that note. I think it's also important to understand when Josh Allen is drafted as high as he was, he's going to get a little bit more leeway, okay, to make mistakes.
Well, sure.
And, you know, that's much different than Tommy DeVito, where he came from. Now, Brady was a late-round pick, but when Brady replaced Drew Bledsoe, you know, Brady jump-started New England. And I think, you know, like anything else, Paul, in life, when you develop a track record, the coaches are going to give you a little bit more rope, okay, to work with. Whereas if you're an undrafted free agent and you're coming in to fill in, you don't have as much wiggle room to say, I'm going to take three or four games and I'm going to have up and down play, and then we're going to leave you in for four or five more games. I think the conversation's very different.
It is. I don't know how old Billy is, but he sounded really young, but I love the fact that he was so logical and rational. Billy, that's a great phone call, and I hope you call us again on the program. In terms of what he was saying, though, about Tommy DeVito, we've had this conversation before, and I have come around to the fact that you had suggested maybe the Giants do keep three quarterbacks on the 53. I'm thinking that that's probably a little bit more of a possibility than I would have thought a couple of months back. And it may wind up being Jones and Locke and DeVito. It may just be those three guys. That's entirely possible. Or it turns out to be Jones and Locke and maybe a fourth-round draft pick.
And I would go with the latter more so than the former, that I'm leaning towards to keep three.
See, because the danger of Jones getting hurt, if you have Locke as your number two, well then, if you try to waive DeVito, he's going to get taken.
I don't know, Paul.
You don't think?
You really think that?
I do.
You think after, I mean, remember, it was a small sample size last year. You had teams go through an entire offseason. They're going to draft quarterbacks. I don't know if you put him out on waivers that you can't get him back on the practice squad.
I think it's very risky. Look, I had a scout tell me flat out, an independent scout, he's not affiliated with the Giants. He said to me, what do you think they're going to do with DeVito? And I said, well, he could wind up being waived to practice squad again, or maybe there's a chance they keep him on the 53, but I don't know. He goes, well, I'm going to tell you something. There are teams that would claim him. And I said, you think so? He goes, did you watch the Green Bay game last year when he led them in that comeback victory on the last drive, brought them right down the field, and won the game for them? He said, you know how many quarterbacks have been in this league, backup quarterbacks, and have not succeeded in a game-winning drive in the final 2 minutes of a game? He said, do you know how many coaches and how many scouts want to see that in an NFL game out of a prospect, and they never get to see it because the guy just never gets it done? And I said, so just because of that, he goes, just because of that one drive, Tommy DeVito lit a blip on other teams' radars. And there will be some teams very interested in claiming him. That's what he told me.
Well, I mean, it certainly was an impressive drive, I'll give you that. But, I mean, you know, you got me thinking, Kenny Pickett, right, when he was a rookie in Pittsburgh, he showed a lot of flashes late in games against the Raiders.
Well, he's now the number two on the Eagles. There's nothing wrong with that.
No, but
he's going to be on the 53.
Yeah, but Pittsburgh got rid of him. I mean, you would argue value to still having him on the roster.
But there are 31 other teams.
Sure.
Which means if you try to sneak him onto the practice squad, all it takes is one of 31 to say, we want him.
I think, once again, I think it also depends on where are we once we're up against the start of the season. Did guys go down? Did they get hurt? You know, right now,
we're
looking at a vast landscape.
You're absolutely true. The point that I'm making to you is the possibility exists that A, he could still be on the 53, and B, he could possibly make it to practice squad, or C, he could get claimed. I think all three could happen. I wouldn't rule out any of them.
I just, once again, I go back to if it's Jones, Locke, and they draft a quarterback. Even if they draft somebody in the third or the fourth round.
Well, then Tommy is in all likelihood going to get waived. Yeah. And if he gets claimed, he gets claimed. What are you going to do?
I think therefore you don't have the flexibility. If they don't draft a quarterback and it's Jones and Locke, then I think it depends on what does the rest of the roster look like.
Sure.
Are there other injuries? Can they afford
no doubt.
To have a spot for
absolutely
a
no doubt. Now, what was said to me by another NFL scout when we talked about this, he said, here's what I want to ask you. How many times during the course of the season did the Giants have a guy dressed on their game day roster, their active roster, not their 53, but their game day roster after the inactives came out? Didn't you have at least one guy every week who didn't even play? And I said, actually, yeah, that happened a lot where there was a guy dressed who didn't even get into a game. He said, well, then what's the harm? What's the harm if you wind up with Jones, Locke, and DeVito? What's the harm in keeping DeVito as the third quarterback because he's basically taking a dead spot on the roster anyway on your 53? You know, it's not like he's using up a spot that was readily available and used last year anyway when you cut down your inactive list. So he said, considering that you're worried possibly about Jones getting hurt, well, why don't you just keep DeVito on your 53 so that you know if Jones does go down at any time, you still have two active quarterbacks available to you to put in that game. He said, I could make a case for that. I'm like, all right. I'm not going to rule it out.
No, and I'm with you. I just, to answer the question of what that scout was talking about, I mean, I think guys probably didn't wind up playing, but they were insurance policies at other positions, right? Mm-hmm. Because where the roster was going into that game, they said, okay, well, you know, we need a security blanket at linebacker because we're worried about if so-and-so goes down. So that's going to fluctuate and vary mm-hmm. over the course of the season. On the surface, yeah. What's the harm in keeping three quarterbacks? But talk to the front office and the coaching staff in week 7 when the dynamics of your roster are very different. Anthony is in South Carolina joining us here. What's happening, Anthony? What do you got?
What's up, y'all? All right, it's my first time calling, so I just want to give y'all some compliments. Paul Lance, I watch y'all every day. I like the show.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for tuning in.
I want to give Jonathan his compliments, too, because I like when he's on the show, too. I like that player insight. And Maddie, she a gem, too, so...
He'll be here on Thursday, I believe, right? Thursday's for
right.
Jonathan's next show is Thursday. He'll be on with me.
Okay, bet. All right, I got one opinion, and I got one question for y'all.
Yeah.
All right. I know, Paul, you're going to hate this because I know you're an Odunze guy, but I like Neighbors.
That's okay.
All right, I like Odunze's combine interviews better than Neighbors, though.
Okay.
I feel like he'll fit the media a little bit better than Neighbors, but I like Neighbors' skill set because I think we need to keep Darius Slayton. I think he's an asset, not a liability.
Yep.
That's my opinion.
The offense needs a game breaker, and either one of those guys can probably get it done. In fact, according to most, they will get it done. So if they take Neighbors, it's not gonna make me cry at all. I'll be very happy to have him.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. All right, then. Here's my question for you guys. All right. If we draft a wide receiver number 6, right, and we trade up to the bottom of the first and we get Michael Penix, knowing he's a left-handed quarterback, would you think they'll ever move Andrew Thomas to the right side, or you think he's locked down on the left?
Don't move your tackles. Let Andrew Thomas stay there and cement his feet into the ground for the next 10 years. Don't fuss with him.
Yeah, I would agree. I think what gets overlooked is the footwork aspect. I mean, as good as Andrew Thomas is, you flip him, he's got to now reverse course. And I don't think that's necessarily the wisest game plan because what you essentially are doing is, just think about this, you're creating a question mark at right tackle mm-hmm. as to whether or not Andrew Thomas will be comfortable. You're also now opening up a question mark at left tackle to replace Andrew Thomas.
Yeah.
So you're creating two issues when you already had one solidified. You're hurting your team as opposed to strengthening it.
Okay?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
All right, Anthony.
All right, you guys have a blessed one, man.
You too, man.
Appreciate the phone call.
Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah. And, I mean, if you look at, I'm thinking top of my head, Tua's left-handed, okay? I don't remember the Dolphins shifting their tackles when they drafted Tua. Steve Young was left-handed, right? Mm-hmm. And Joe Montana was the opposite, was right-handed. Did the Niners say, well, we're going to take our left tackle now, put him to right tackle?
No.
You don't see that happen very often because I think most coaches are like, I don't want to give ourselves two headaches as opposed to one.
Leave well enough alone.
Yes. So I think, no, it's an interesting point.
Okay.
Because in fairness, maybe we don't talk enough about the blind side does change, right?
When it does.
A left-handed quarterback.
It absolutely does.
But if the guy is seeing the pressure coming, he still has to deal with it, Paul, right?
Yeah.
You know? Just because he has an angle doesn't mean, oh, he can now all of a sudden elude all the guys coming at him. You know? He needs somewhere to go. So if you make sure that the direction that he's seeing is good, then he only has to worry about one side, not two, and not be sandwiched under those circumstances. All right. That is going to wrap up Tuesday's edition of BBKL. Appreciate everybody tuning in as we move along here on 12:30 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday, carrying on the conversation about the Giants. Today's episode, part of the Giants platforms everywhere and giants.com/podcasts. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadows. Stay locked to Big Blue Kickoff Live for all the latest, and we'll speak to you on Wednesday. Take it easy. Have a good one.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and everybody. The weather is getting warmer and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back. Plus, no payments for 90 days and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.